You gonna do the intro on this one, John?
I don't know. You can. It rolls better with you, it seems. Of course,
why?
I haven't done much of it. I don't know. It just seems to flow better.
But I like the sound of your voice.
Well, that's a little unsettling.
All right.
So.
It's time to hit the trail, lock in those hubs, and throw it into low range. Because you are listening to Wheelin' with Keith and Johnny Orange, broadcasting from the Thin Line Off-Road Studio. They're here to talk about 4x4s, trucks, and everything to do with enjoying the great outdoors. Buckle up. Here's your hosts, Keith and Johnny Orange.
Welcome to Wheelin'. I'm Johnny Orange, and we have Keith here.
I think you did good there. I don't know. We switch back and forth here. You know, there's a partnership. So.
I'll do better next time.
So, John, do you ever watch the that guy on there, the Donut Media guy on Facebook?
I don't think so. I think I've come across that.
Yeah.
Unless you do specialties on how to make specialized donuts or something.
I wish.
How they get the hole out of the donut.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be.
I always wondered how they did that.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
On the Donut Media guy, I forgot his name right now, but Alex, I was just literally just thinking of this, but he does a bunch of different episodes, different vehicles, kind of like we do. But you know, he's more of a visual thing on Facebook, and he's got some cool background stuff and
nice.
A lot of funny things and whatnot. And we weren't, you know, paid or anything to talk about him, and I love what he does, I really do. But he just did an episode, or maybe it's an old one, but I just saw it on the Pontiac Aztec. You remember those things?
I love those things. I don't care what anybody says.
Why is
that?
I
love those. I always liked the shape and the design, which seems to be what everybody hated about it.
The car stacked on top of a car?
Yeah. I just liked it. I liked that you could get a tent for it that, like, was part of it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah, they did. They had a tent you could get in the back where you'd pop it open.
And
all the seats folded down. And then they had, like, it was one of the first vehicles, I believe, that had an inverter so you could plug in your 110.
I believe it.
You know, your appliances and things like that.
I have a friend of mine, she had one as of up to a couple years ago, last time I talked to her. She just kept fixing the thing and still going, last I heard. I think it is out of commission now.
Okay.
But no, she loved that thing.
Well, there was a joint venture with Pontiac. Of course, Pontiac's defunct now.
Yeah.
But there was a joint venture with Pontiac and Lexus when they built that thing.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of it's Toyota Lexus design. Well, Lexus is the upper end Toyota brand.
Mm.
And so Lexus had a lot of say in designing the Pontiac.
I never knew that.
But so, you know, that was one of the first SUVs that was really ever marketed as a crossover SUV.
Mm-hmm.
But was it truly the first crossover SUV? I don't think so. I think there's been a lot of things in automotive history prior to that that could, you know, be called a crossover SUV. And I've got a couple in my mind, with the very first one that I can think of not even having four-wheel drive with the first generation.
Mm.
And what I'm thinking about is the Willys Jeepster.
Ah.
Now, you're familiar with Willys Jeepster, of course. You own
one. Oh, yeah. Yep.
You own a second generation C-130?
C-101.
C-101.
Yep. C-101. It's the Jeepster Commando, 1967. And the 101 was just measured the wheelbase, 101-inch wheelbase.
Okay, so I learned something every day. I mean, even the research we did prior to this episode, I didn't know that's what 101 stood for.
Yep.
It's the wheelbase of the vehicle.
Yes, and the later model that they referred to as the Bullnose, the 71 up, I believe, was the C-104, because 104-inch wheelbase.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense now, because I wonder why that they jumped from the 101 to the 104. I was like, what happened to the 102 and the 103?
They didn't do so well.
It's the wheelbase.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we're putting the cart way before the horse here.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to talk about Jeepster history, and that's kind of our subject today, we need to go back to the beginning.
Way back to Willys?
Way back to Willys, exactly. So Willys Company, and this is what I know about it, and you're going to have to fill in the blanks as we go along here.
I'll do my best.
The Willys Company, Willys Overland, which of course, pretty much anybody knows anything about off-road vehicles or 4x4s knows that they created the Jeep. Well, Bantam did.
Yep. And, you know, so technically, Bantam made it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So Willys is the first one that mass-produced it. And then there's the wartime contracts. And we'll get into all of that someday, how Ford made Jeeps during the war and everything, too. So, but post-war, Willys still owned the rights to the Jeep name and to the Jeep brand. So they immediately went into production of, you know, not only the first civilian Jeeps, which were the, you know, CJ2, civilian Jeep second generation, but they also decided that they needed to make things that were more car-like and more for the general public. So, you know, Jeep's first SUV would be the Willys wagon, which, you know, came out right after the war. Yep. They had the, you know, 46, you'd get the Willys wagon. And, or maybe it was 48. We can look that up another time. But yeah, it was right after the war, within a year or two, they had the Willys wagon, which was based off the Willys pickup truck. And it was just a full SUV. But of course, back then they didn't call them an SUV. It was just a four-wheel drive station wagon.
Yeah.
But they saw a market for something that was rugged, but maybe a little more refined than their Willys wagon. So by definition, that's really a crossover.
Yes.
They decided they wanted to cross over something between the Willys wagon and their open top CJ2.
And that's where we get the Willys Overland Jeepster.
The Willys Overland Jeepster, which was introduced for the 1948 model year. It was very car-like, but yet it looked like a Jeep.
Yep. It had a convertible option, too.
Convertible top, pretty nice interior.
Oh, yeah.
It had full doors on it. It was two-wheel drive only. What was the engine options in 48 there?
So in 1948, the Go Devil inline four, which came in at 134.1 cubic inches, and that survived until 1950.
And the first generation Jeepster, they made only for those 3 years, correct?
I don't know on that. The details I have are for the what they called the VJ Jeepsters. And that one shows production number 1948 of 10,326.
Okay, so they made a little over 10,000 in 1948. And then I know they made them in 49 and then 50. And from the research I've done, it looks like they did have some 51s, but they were just unsold 50s.
Exactly.
Okay, so really they had a three-year span of production with a fourth year of model year.
Yes.
But it was just an unsold 1950.
Yep.
And these had chrome grills, hubcaps. I think they had white wall tires, or at least a thin white wall tire on them.
Yep.
And they were a pretty fancy little Jeep.
Yeah,
but once again, they weren't really a four-wheel drive.
Though. No, the idea was a two-door open car, like a sports car for the veterans.
I never thought of it that way. So that's really what it was. So so you had a GI that came home from the war, you know, service member that came home from the war. And a lot of these guys lived out in the country. They just wanted a Jeep like they had during the war. So they would buy a CJ2.
Yeah.
But there might have been, well, not might have, there was, you know, hundreds of thousands of American soldiers that came back that weren't necessarily country boys. Maybe they lived in the city. Maybe they were golf players. Maybe they worked at a corporate office somewhere. And so something a little more refined than driving a very rugged Jeep or even a Willys wagon, the Willys Jeepster kind of filled that void. So if they had that fondness for the Jeep brand, the Willys Jeepster would kind of fill that, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Nice little upgrade, a little more stylish vehicle.
Oh, they're really cool looking.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a few of them around town. There's one gentleman that's restored one. I want to say it's a beige color. And I just catch him out of the corner of my eye every now and then driving through town. I was like, hey, that's cool.
They are. They are really cool. They have a style all of their own, and it's interesting. Did you find in your research why they in 1950 51 stopped producing these?
I don't think it specifically had anything in there like that. I don't know. I just more looked up the Jeepster specifics on that. I'm sure it was just something to do with other models taking over and gaining more popularity at the time.
Well, yeah, you know, I do know that some in the late 40s, early 50s, some very beautiful convertibles were coming out of Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, you had your 49 Oldsmobile Delta, you know, the big 88, the Super 88, and you had the Chevys, and you had even the Fords and whatnot. So competing with a market, you know, those cars were even more refined and more car-like.
Oh, yeah.
So competing with that market for a convertible Jeep that was refined, it was such a new thing. You know, new things don't always catch on very quick.
No.
Being a crossover. So, you know, really, it was a neat idea, but Willys abandoned it pretty quickly.
Mm.
And then, of course, in 1953, Willys merges with the Kaiser Automobile Company.
Yep. It was actually Kaiser Motors, I believe it was called.
Yeah, Kaiser Motors. And they were Kaiser Frazier before that.
Yep.
And Kaiser was known for building high-quality cars with really forward-thinking designs.
Yeah.
And they built a lot of things that really had some sharp edges and some wraparound windows. And they just had a lot of, like, appeal to them. You know, they had that panache that, you know, you know it was a vehicle that was affordable, but it had that aerodynamic look. It looked like a jet, you know.
Yep.
It was supposed to look like an airplane going down the road. And Kaiser merges with Willys at that point, and they become the Kaiser Jeep brand.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep the Willys name for a few years.
Yeah, and then that was phased out about 1955.
Yeah, on the CJ5 model.
Yep.
They had some Willys CJ5s, but they eventually phased that out. So now we've got completely, really a newly restructured company.
Mm.
We have the Kaiser Jeep Company that's going along, and they're looking to make their own mark in the automotive world. And they are trying to find, you know, various products to bring besides just the open top Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And the mid-60s, well, late-60s, was the SUV boom. Once again, they weren't really even called SUVs at the time, but 1966, we got the Ford Bronco coming out.
Yeah.
We have the International Scout 800 model, which I think was 64, I believe. And so we've got these small open-top four-wheel drive vehicles that are coming out that need to be on that are on the market. And they're built as a competition for Jeep because they are built as a more refined vehicle. Not necessarily luxurious, but, you know, by 1966 standards, kind of luxurious.
Yeah.
So Kaiser Jeep decides that they need to compete with those, mainly with the International and with the Bronco. And then, of course, a few years later, we've got the Blazer that comes out. But the International, the Bronco, these small SUVs. So what was their answer to that, John?
Well, they actually decided to resurrect the Jeepster name. So in the concept, they brought it back, and we have the Jeepster Commando. It was originally just known as the C-101, which, again, 101-inch wheelbase.
Okay. Yeah, and, yeah, like you just taught me that.
Yep. And then it morphed into its own thing.
It did. And one of the things that the C-101 did, which was a little different than the first generation Jeepster, was they did share a number of parts with the CJ line.
Yes.
And that helped to keep production costs down.
Yeah.
And it looked like a Jeep, even maybe more so arguably than a Jeepster, because the Jeepster had that very
pointy grill.
Yeah, it had the pointy grill. It had a lot of chrome in the front.
Yep.
The C-101 was now more utilitarian.
Yes.
But for the first time, the Jeepster now has four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
I don't even think they made a two-wheel drive C-101, did they?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
No. So it was four-wheel drive. They added the addition of the four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And the front end looks like, the CJ5 of the time. It's got the 7-slot grill.
Yep.
A little wider, though. The hood's wider The fenders, I think, are the same, aren't they?
Don't remember off the top of my head on that. I know there's a number of parts that do interchange, though.
If they're not the same as the CJ fenders, close. They look very, very close. Yeah. And the body, though, is different, though. So yes. they decide to add some body lines in it for character.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this swept back with it that kind of has that forward lean, like, say, the Seville model Cadillac of the 80s, where it kind of it leans forward in the rear. And it was a really kind of a different approach to automotive styling.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pretty neat piece that's now, you know, they've created something. They're using an old name, but they've created something brand new, because it really doesn't share any parts with the original Jeepster, does it?
Not that I'm aware of. They were pretty different in terms of years apart. As far as more specifics, that I couldn't tell you. I mean, the engine options were different. There's no doubt there.
So, you know, and I'll give you this one. Let's just do a little side note. Want to have some fun for a second?
Sure.
What's the only part that is on a modern vehicle that would be shared with, say, a vehicle 100 years ago? And, and you can interchange the part.
That's a good one.
There's one part that really, since its introduction, has had almost no change whatsoever. And so 99% of vehicles produced since, say, 1905, 1906 are still using the exact same part.
I'm going to take a stab and say the radiator cap.
No, because there's been a lot of different ones.
Oh.
The Schrader valve.
Oh.
On the tires. The you know, the little inflation valve for your tires has really not changed. Such a simple design. And so I'm sure that the first generation Jeepster and the second generation Jeepster both use the same Schrader valve.
Oh, I'll take your word.
There you go. It's such a little thing.
If I ever come across one, I might just have to verify that if I can.
There you go, right?
Yeah.
So I think this might be a good point. We want to go back into talking a little more of the C101 and what they were offering. But I do think this is a good time for us to have a word from our sponsors.
We'll see you in a bit.
Have you heard the good news? Now there's a local paper that people just can't seem to get enough of. It's the Thumbprint News. The Thumbprint News is free and full of interesting stories that focus on what's important in our lives. Stories that touch on this area's rich history, unique places, and the diverse cultures and people. You'll be in the know when you read the Thumbprint News. Go to thumbprintnews.com and read the paper online for free today.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is Keith and Johnny Orange. We are on the Wheelin' Podcast. Before we went to break, we were talking about the Willys Jeepster, and we'd kind of gotten up to the point where we were talking about the C101 model, which is the second generation of the Willys Jeepster, and how it had been competing with the International Scout and things like that, used a lot of the CJ parts. But now it's a four-wheel drive, a little more of a rugged vehicle, and it's a little more deserving of the Jeep name, really.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the C101 that's now come out has been built as something that is supposed to be available in several different body styles, although it's the same body tub, correct?
Same body as what?
The same body tub.
Oh, yes.
So the body is the same, but you can order it with different tops that made it different ways, right?
So they had three different options available for that one. They had it available as a pickup truck, a convertible, and a roadster wagon.
Okay, so you could get like a full hard top, or you could get a half hard top, or it could be just full.
No top with optional soft top.
Okay, so there are some different options there. And the C101, how many of those did they make?
I'm trying to skim over my notes. I thought that I had that, and I can't seem to find it.
All right, well, I know that the first generation Willys, they only made about 20,000 of the 48 to 50 or 51, you know, depending on who you're asking.
I had that in here, actually.
I know they made a lot more than that.
Yeah.
They made, you know, probably 80, 90, 100,000 of them, didn't they?
Nope. 1948 to 1950,
About 20,000.
19,132.
Okay, so a little under 20,000. How about the second generation, the C101, though? How many did
that? That's what I'm skimming through my notes. Apparently, I forgot to write that down. I know the model that followed that, the C104, between 72 and 73, they made 20,223 of them.
So almost the same amount as the first generation for the third generation.
Correct.
So, the most popular, though, going back to the C101, the most popular was the C101.
Yes.
They had, you know,
Here we go. I'm sorry. 57,350.
Okay, so
there we go.
Over 57,000 of these things were made, the C101s. Very popular. You know, I mean, it's still not high production. You know,
no.
Compared to some cars that they maybe make 100,000 or 500,000 of.
Yeah.
It's still a fairly low production, but... you know, we do need to mention the rarest Jeep, production Jeep that's ever been built, is the Hearst Jeepster.
Yes.
And, you know, they planned to make 500 of those, but the Hearst Jeepster was like a hot rod Jeep, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Came with, now correct me if I'm wrong here, it came with a Hearst shifter, of course, because Hearst was a shifter. So it came with a chrome Hearst shifter, special red, white, and blue paint job.
Yep. A roof rack.
Roof rack.
Sports steering wheel.
Yeah. Different steering wheel.
Goodyear raised white letter tires on wider steel wheels than the 101.
Okay. I didn't know about the wheels. So it had different wheels too?
Yes.
Okay. So the Hearst Jeepster, they were planning on making 500 of them, but... we don't have an actual number as how many were made, but it's believed by the Jeep historians out there today that there was only maybe about 100 of them that were ordered by dealerships. So, you know, and that number has gone around. I looked online at the Hearst Jeepster registry, and I think they're up to about 60 or so that have been registered. So they're guessing that there's probably another 40 to 60 out there that are not registered. Or known of, because, of course, some of the ones on the registry are ones that have been wrecked, parted out, whatever.
I believe it.
So, you know, that's one of the rarest Jeeps out there is the Hearst Jeepster C101. Pretty cool piece. Love to get one in the museum someday.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty neat piece. So now, the Jeepster is really a pretty popular model, and it's not as popular as the open-top Jeep. But it's doing pretty well for itself, standing alone. But then the Jeepster gets another curveball. American Motors Corporation buys Kaiser Jeep.
Yep.
And so now the Jeepster is got its third owner. Third corporation owns the Jeepster name now. And AMC... goes in and decides that they are going to completely redesign. You know, and before we get into that, I want to go back a little bit to the C101.
Mm.
What were the engine options in the C101, John?
So in the C101, you had your options of the 225 cubic inch Buick V6. And that one...
That was the Dauntless, right?
Yep, the Dauntless V6.
Dauntless V6.
That was the predecessor to the 3.8 liter that you see in Chevys to this day. And the other option, excuse me, was the F-head Hurricane Straight 4. So that was a direct descendant of the Go Devil that was available in the first gen.
Okay.
And that one produced about 75 horsepower.
75? All of those horsepowers?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
Whereas the Dauntless was put out about 160.
Okay, so the V6 was definitely a better option. That was a Buick sourced engine.
Yep.
Which is pretty common. We're going to talk about that again. I know I say that a lot, but we're going to talk about different history things in the future. Jeep, over all of their history, has the majority of their time, with only one exception I know of, has always used somebody else's engine.
Yeah.
They've purchased an engine from another manufacturer or used it from their own corporation, but Jeep doesn't necessarily design their engines internally. So they were using Buick engines in them, which that 3.8's a great engine. I mean, it's lightweight, it's powerful, great little thing. They also used that same engine in the CJ5s of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's in a lot of boats too, actually.
I didn't know that. So they had marine applications for that
one? They did. A friend of mine had an old boat that had a 225 Buick in it.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool. And that engine itself has its own history where it goes through several generations. Odd fire, even fire, and then they eventually went to the 60-degree bell housing.
Yep.
The Grand National 3.8. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different versions there.
It's a very rich history when you start looking at all the nuances of that engine, without a doubt.
Yeah, you know, that might be a whole episode sometime.
Oh, yeah. I believe, if I remember correctly, that stems all the way back to the 196 cubic inch, I believe is the original ancestor of the 225.
They had a smaller V6.
Yes.
Oh, yep. Okay. Well, yeah, that's interesting. That's something to look into. So, back to the Jeeps themselves. So we know what the engines they had and everything. AMC takes over in 1970, and AMC is a new motor car company. They've been put together from a couple different companies that merged together, and AMC's got this idea of what their product should look like. And one of the first things the AMC does is they redesign the front end of the Jeepster, because AMC, pretty much their entire vehicle line in the early 70s was a slab front, very wide, rectangular front. And so a vehicle that went down the road, you looked at it and you saw this big rectangle grill, you knew it was an AMC.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So they decide to redesign the Jeepster into the C-104. And, you know, people today, they call them the bullnose because it looks like, you know, it looks like it's got a big old bull's nose on the front.
Yeah.
And, you know, in hindsight, I love the bullnose. I think it's a great looking Jeep.
I while my heart still lies with the original C-101, just because of the history that my family has with one particular vehicle, I definitely do like the look of the 104. It just seems more full, more unique, stands out in its own right.
Well, like anything with automotive history, you know, with time, stuff looks good to people.
Yes.
But at the time, it was a flop.
People
did not like that. It didn't have the 7 slots.
That killed it.
It killed it. That's exactly it killed it. Killed and it. So the Jeepster really only survives for 71, 72.
Yep.
And the production or the sales are terrible on it.
Yeah.
And they only made about 20,000, just like the first generation Jeepster.
Yeah.
Only made about 20,000 bullnoses, and the Jeepster's gone.
The only advantage to the 104 in that sense, it did have different engine options available.
What were those?
So it had the AMC 232 inline 6. That was 71 to 72.
And that's the predecessor to the 258.
Yep, which was also available in that one.
Oh, you could get a 258 and a 104?
Apparently.
I did not know that.
I didn't either. Again, this is all internet research. You never know what's actually. But it's there. And what a lot of people didn't realize, the AMC 304 V8 was an option in the bullnose.
I did know that. I've actually heard of that before. Yeah. And I bet you, because those Jeepsters don't weigh a lot.
No.
They're really not much heavier than, say, a CJ5 or a CJ7 Jeep.
Sounds about right.
And so with a healthy V8 on them, I bet you a Jeepster would scoot. Now, I've never had the opportunity to drive a V8 Jeepster, but I bet you that'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
That would be pretty cool. So, basically, you know, unfortunately, through some mismanagement or at least some misideas through AMC, they kill the Jeepster within 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the Jeepster story for at least for the production of the Jeepster for now. Now, John, you yourself, you've got some personal family history with the Jeepsters. I know over at the Museum of Off-Road Adventure, you've got your family Jeepster on display over there, your C-101. Tell us a little bit about your family history with the Jeepster.
Well, it obviously predates me. It's a 67 Jeepster Commando. I'm from 88, so it's a little older than I am. So that vehicle, my grandfather purchased used, so he's the second owner of that. I do actually still have the title from when he purchased it, which Secretary of State let me keep, which was cool. But that vehicle was a farm Jeep, similar to the Grand Wagoneer we mentioned in a prior episode. And I don't ever remember seeing that thing run. I just remember seeing it parked in the old barn out back, you know, sitting on all flat tires, just sat there. When I was little, used to pop the hood and play around under it and sit in it and pretend to shift it and drive it and everything. Obviously, I didn't know what I was doing back then.
But it puts that seed of interest.
Yes.
Yeah.
It always had me interested. And back then, I always wanted to learn how to work on cars because I wanted to work on that Jeep.
Very cool.
And through talking with, you know, family members over the years, you know, my mom learned how to drive on that. You know, she is one of seven siblings, and they all learned how to drive on that thing. All their friends learned how to drive on that. So needless to say, on a three-speed transmission, it's now two speeds because first gear no longer exists.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's you're from a small town in Michigan here, and we get patrons that come to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And they recognize that Jeep. Older folks do. They recognize it from around town.
I believe it.
You know,
I know my mom for a short time drove it for work. Even when the heat went out in it, you just had to let it warm up about a half hour, and it made enough heat to come through and keep it defrosted.
Well, that works, right? You know?
Yeah, they all learned how to drive on it, and it's always been there. And before my grandfather passed away, he gave it to me. And it had probably at that point been sitting about 15 years. And my dad and I went to tow it home that day. Amazingly, all the tires still held air. And we put a battery in it, try and get the flashers on so we could at least tow safely, you know, the short distance to where I live now. And turned the key, and it started to turn the engine over, which I did not expect. Obviously, I didn't let it try and start because there's no radiator hoses and God knows what other work it needs. But after sitting for 15 years, the engine wasn't locked up or anything.
And so yours does have the Buick V6 in it.
Yep, it's a 225 V6, and it's got the three-speed transmission. I am one day going to do a little bit of a resto mod project on that. You know, before my grandfather passed away, I asked him, you know, what color, if you could paint this thing anything in the world, what would you paint it? And he said, I'd keep it what it is. You know, fresh coat of what's there. And I, out of respect, I'm going to keep some of that for him. I'm not a fan of it. Excuse me. It's a flat red and kind of a flat white color.
Kind of like a Massey Ferguson red.
Kind of, except there's about 12 different shades of it as you walk around
that.
The vehicle. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to tape off a few areas and do like some stripes and then come up with probably like a flat black with flat red stripes. Kind of in honor of him.
Oh, there you go.
I think that'd be very cool.
That would be very cool.
So,
well, why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll wrap up after this.
Sounds good.
There's never just one of them. When you see one yellow jacket buzzing around, you can bet there's a whole colony somewhere nearby. Sometimes in nests as large as a basketball. Yellow jackets and wasps are bold, they're aggressive, and their stingers definitely hurt. So don't let them become a problem around your home. Call ABC Home and Commercial Services. They're the best in pests. ABC Home and Commercial Services. Call them today. 810-794-5678.
We are back here today at the Thin Line Off-Road Studios with Johnny Orange and Keith.
Absolutely, John. So a little correction. We were talking over the break. I had said that the last year for the C-104 was 1972. Correction on that, the last year was 1973. So the bullnose version was only a couple of years there, but 73 was the last year for the Jeepster name. With that being said, you know, today Jeep is kind of going through a renovation and a renaissance and reusing some of their older names. Of course, the first name that they brought back from the dead, besides some of the ones that they've recycled over the years, such as, say, Sahara and things like that with the Wrangler model line, they brought back the Renegade name for a whole new line of Jeeps. And they use that for the Fiat-based small SUV that they imported here.
Yeah.
And you're not a big fan of those?
I am not. I think it's ugly.
You know, I kind of like the looks of them, but, you know, what I kind of wonder with the Renegade is that going to be our kids' generation XJ Cherokee? Is that going to be the Jeep that they're going to be able to pick up for, you know, $500-$600 used.
Good Lord, I hope not.
Well, I mean, what else? They're not going to pick up a solid axle Wrangler for that kind of price.
By then, maybe.
You know, well, I mean, they'll come down, the JKs, yeah. Now that they're in the JLs now. But,
yeah. I mean, maybe, you know, the Cherokee will still be around by then.
Well, they've got the Cherokee name, too.
Yeah.
Which has come back, and that, yep. That's more of a crossover SUV now.
Yeah, again, not... personally, I'm not a fan.
You're not a fan.
My dad has one. A good friend of mine has one. I'll admit they ride nice. They have some good creature comforts in them, absolutely. But to me, it's just, it's not a Cherokee.
Hmm.
You know, I want something that's going to rattle my fillings out going down a dirt road. Yeah,
there's that. They did take quite a jump from the AMC-designed XJ
yeah.
to the Cherokee now. I mean, it's just, it's a completely different beast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Altogether.
And I think that the Renegade, personally, is a little more rugged, but it's still, it's front-wheel drive until you put it in four-wheel, and then yeah. you have it as a rear-wheel drive, and it's available in front-wheel drive only, which, of course, that's...
Yeah. I will say this. My sister has one and absolutely loves it.
Oh, I didn't even know. She has a Renegade?
Yeah.
Okay. Friend of mine does, too, that lives up north, and he likes it, so... I haven't experienced one yet, but mm-hmm. you know, that's what I'm kind of curious if that's going to be the next cheap Jeep that you can buy in 15 years with just a few bucks, you know? And if so, you know, maybe the aftermarket will catch up and there'll be some cool stuff available.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, I've learned never to discount anything when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
You never know what's going to happen.
Well, and exactly. For example, through the 70s, Jeep had, 60s and 70s, they had a full-size pickup truck that they called the Gladiator.
Yeah, I love that thing.
I mean, they were awesome. Oh, and that was, of course, truck. The last generation of the J truck that started out with, like, the J2000, J3000.
All very cool in their own respect.
They are. And then eventually they had the Gladiator. And now Jeep brought back the Gladiator name on the JL platform. So it's a Wrangler-based truck.
Mm-hmm.
As a four-door truck, but they call it the Gladiator.
Yeah.
A lot of people said that should have been called the Scrambler instead because, you know, they had the Scrambler truck back in the 70s and 80s, which was Wrangler-based.
Yeah, that was a CJ8 platform, wasn't it?
CJ8 platform, yeah. So what, you know, what do you think the possibilities are that now that they've recycled the Renegade name and the Gladiator name, are they going to recycle the Jeepster name?
I think there's a chance of it. It's obviously got its own cult following. Nothing quite like some of the other ones, of course. I don't know if they're going to have the market for a vehicle of that caliber. When you look at all the different SUVs or cars, you know, big cars, small cars that everybody's is in demand right now, I don't, unfortunately, think that the market is there for that in-betweener like the Jeepster.
Okay, so let's just kind of play pretend here for a moment. If they were going to produce a new Jeepster,
mm-hmm.
what would you like to see? What do you envision? Let's just say, let's throw a number out there. Let's say for 2025, they decide mm-hmm. to come out with a Jeepster. What do you think, what's your vision of what a future Jeepster would look like?
Something like that. I think you'd almost have to have a cross between a car and a Wrangler. Unpleasant as that sounds, it's almost, I mean, you have the Wrangler. You know, mm-hmm. that's a very rugged, very off-road capable vehicle, but it doesn't have a crazy high capacity. It's not the most pleasant ride in the world either. Whereas a car, significantly more comfort in traveling, you know, to and from work or school or wherever you're going. So I think what they would need is a cross between that. Something that's more off-road capable, something that can handle poor weather conditions, be it snow or rain, but have more comfort in the ride. Almost as much as I hate to say it, like the Renegade, but different.
Well, the Renegade, I look at that as a small SUV. I don't really look at that as being car-based. So what you're kind of, if I'm envisioning what you're describing, you're talking about really a crossover SUV again. Something
but smaller.
Smaller.
Yeah.
So do you think open top?
I think I have the option. I mean, to stay true to what the name is, I'd love to see that in it. I don't know if the market would demand that or demand a hard top. But to give you, you know, the best of both worlds, I think it should have it, yeah.
You know, and I know this is going to probably sound sacrilegious to you.
I think I know where you're going with this.
You might. I'm thinking if Jeep was going to go into the electric market, that the Jeepster name might be the name to put on that.
That would be. That's not where I thought you were going, first off.
Okay, where did you think I was going?
I thought you were going to say about solid axles.
But getting rid of the solid axles?
Yeah, unfortunately, though, that's where everything's going anyways, is the independent suspension.
Yeah.
But that vehicle as an electric, I could see just stealing the market.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm envisioning a slimmed-down Wrangler, cut some of the fat of the Wrangler, lay back the windshield a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
A little more aerodynamic.
Exactly.
A little more comfort.
A little more aerodynamic, a little more comfort, get a little lower to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have a larger underhood or trunk-type area for the battery storage. So I think if Jeep is going to build a electric vehicle, which that's the way the future is going. You know, we'll probably all be driving electric vehicles in 30 years. Internal combustion is going away.
Yeah.
Man, to me,
Jeepster would be a great name for
that. The electric Jeep needs to be the Jeepster because Jeepster almost sounds, even in the name to me, sounds like
electronic almost.
Yeah, electronic or like it's a offshoot of Jeep, Jeepster, you
know? Yeah, exactly.
And so
like it is, but it isn't.
Exactly. So if it's a Jeep, but it's a little different, and you know, Jeep wants to make, I mean, can you imagine a four-wheel drive electric vehicle that you could, you know, you got a couple hundred mile range on.
Yeah.
And, you know, that has some rugged capabilities.
Being that it has the name Jeep in it, I would hope it's got four-wheel.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing the Jeepster name, if they ever bring it back, being on an electric vehicle. And I think that would be a pretty smart move on Jeep's name.
So. Absolutely. So if you guys are listening to it, you heard it from us first.
Yeah, if you heard it from us, and if you don't have that idea already, you got to give Whelan credit for coming up with the electric Jeep as being the Jeepster.
I'd be okay with hiding our logo or a picture of us somewhere in one of those little Easter eggs.
Yeah,
that'd
there
be cool.
You go. Yeah, absolutely. Get the Whelan logo like under the hood or something somewhere,
awesome.
You know?
It's probably going to end up in like an optional ashtray or something. But
yeah, there you go. Absolutely. That is a question, you know, whether or not that name's going to be recycled. It does have a cult following. You know, they brought back Gladiator. They brought back Renegade. Part of the reason they didn't bring back the Scrambler name, I believe, is because Polaris is building the Polaris Scramblers.
Yeah.
And Scrambler is also a type of a crossover motorcycle.
Yeah.
On off-road motorcycle, which we want to talk about those in the future.
And there was a type. I want to say back in the 80s or 70s, maybe, it was a small, early UTV style, little six-wheel drive thing called the Scrambler.
Yeah, so it's been an overused name. But, you know, if you think about it, the three generations of the Jeepster pretty much were similar vehicles.
Yeah.
They started out pretty fancy, two-wheel drive only. Then they, you know,
went back to their roots.
Yeah, they made a little more rugged, added four-wheel drive, but they still had, you know, a little bit more of that class to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see, you know, I'm not a golfer at all, but I can see somebody that wants to drive to the country club in his Jeep, taking a brand new electric Jeepster, you know, throwing the golf clubs in the back of it and heading to the club. I can see that as being a hot selling brand.
Oh, yeah. And then you get to park at those EV parking spaces at the mall and not get yelled at.
Well, you know, you got that too, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Not that I ever go to the mall, but...
Well, I thought that's where you do your off-roading.
Ooh. I remember you said that.
Well, on that note, John, you know, I think we've talked. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on about the Jeepster or the history?
Not so much the Jeepster, but you mentioned the Gladiator.
Okay.
I've got something that's been bugging me since I first heard about the new Gladiator coming out.
What, that Russell Crowe wasn't the one selling them?
No, none of that.
Or Brad Pitt?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
So the Gladiator is built on the JL platform, which is a Wrangler.
Correct.
So maybe we can get some people out there to weigh in on this. Shoot us a message or an email, because I'd like to know what everybody thinks of this. I'm of the Wrangler persuasion. I love it, and I will always have it. But if you're driving a Wrangler, you understand this. You have the Jeep Wave. It seems to be predominantly in those who drive Wranglers, from the old actual Wrangler model vehicles through the TJs and the JKs. So when it comes to the Gladiators and the JLs, does the Gladiator get the Jeep Wave or not? Well, it is a Wrangler-based, but it's a truck.
Yeah, but coming, when I used to have my Scrambler, I had a CJ Scrambler going down the road, mm-hmm. we would do the Jeep Wave with that.
Yeah.
Coming straight on from you with a new Gladiator, it still looks like a JL.
Exactly.
So but I would say yes to the Jeep Wave.
I would too, but does it earn the respect of getting it? It is a truck.
Do you do the Jeep Wave to the Jeep Patriots?
No.
No. No, he's the Jeep Patriot.
Nah.
How about the Compass?
No.
No, they don't get that, huh?
Nope. All right. It's pretty much just the Wranglers. And then if I see lifted Cherokees or well-built Cherokees, or if somebody does it first, then I of course, respond.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, that is a good question. And, you know, so you can answer us. You can go ahead and you can go to wheelandradio.com is one way you can get a hold of us. You can get a hold of us on Facebook at Wheeland. It's just called Wheeland, W-H-E-E-L-I-N. And of course, a little bit of news for Wheeland Radio. We are now, this recording here would be episode number 5. We are now on iTunes and iHeartRadio, and you might be able to find us on other platforms pretty soon as well. So your favorite podcasting platforms, keep looking for Wheeland Radio, or just Wheeland, and, you can follow us. And hopefully we're entertaining you guys, but send us messages. You know, whatever platform you're finding us on, you'll find ways to be able to send us a message. I think we're going to get an email set up pretty quick where you can email us directly. I think it's about time to sign off on this one, John. What do you think?
I'm down for that, but don't forget to also make sure to check out the Museum of Off-Road Adventure at themora.org or facebook.com/themora.
Absolutely. Thanks for plugging that, John.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Have a good night, folks.
Enjoy.